Welcome to Brand Disciples. We're calling a generation of entrepreneurs to be on mission as we equip the church to disciple them. I'm Amy Alexander. I love seeing people inside and outside the church walls, empowered to be on mission every single day. I'm built to display Jesus to the world as I teach biblical truth and shepherd people in their journey. As always, I'm joined by David Mills.
Hey, good to be with you and excited to talk about this. I am wired to touch the world like Jesus as someone who is apostolic and evangelistic. What that really means is I'm passionate about getting people on mission and helping them take steps toward Jesus. I love to live on the margin between the church and the marketplace.
Thanks for joining today's Coffee Talk, where Dave and I explore the world of missional entrepreneurship over a cup of coffee. We're in the middle of a series based on the book from Alan Hirsch, 5Q, Reactivating the Original Intelligence and Capacity of the Body of Christ. The premise of this book is simple. Ephesians in the Bible is a crucial tool in helping us understand how to be an effective Christian and an effective body of Christ, wherever that is, right? The body of Christ is inside church walls, but it's also in our neighborhoods, in our homes, in our workplace, in the marketplace. It's everywhere. Ephesians 4, 1 through 16 gives us unique insight into creating unity and maturity as believers and the role that diverse gifts play in our journey to maturity as a whole. The church must be united and then allow for and appreciate diversity of gifts in order to become mature. For these first few episodes, we want to dive in depth about the Ephesians 4 gifts, also known as the ascension gifts. Ephesians 4:11 says, "So Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and the teachers." If you're interested in understanding this assessment that comes from 5Q, there's a link in the show notes. You can learn more about your own gifting, but here's the basic premise. Jesus gifted the church. Again, the church is anywhere and everywhere, even in the marketplace as entrepreneurs. He gifted each of us himself in these five gifts. And 5Q has done an amazing job of taking capital T truth and articulating that and creating a process and a way to understand that for ourselves and think about that. 5Q, and this assessment, of course, is not capital T truth, but it is a great way to discuss it, appreciate it, and learn how to apply what's true in Ephesians to our everyday lives.
So these gifts are really cool in a couple of ways, and they apply to what you're doing in the marketplace in a really significant way, because just like I do, that I bring my whole self to the work. I bring my whole self to the business environment. And even though maybe people try and put rules around me or tell me what I shouldn't do, I still am bringing my gifts and my talents. And so those gifts, understanding those, is really important to being a good leader and to creating a healthy environment. And what's even more important is that these gifts allow you to focus really maturing based upon who Jesus is, rather than some random inventory that somebody gives you based upon how the rest of the world behaves. Our job, our role, is to model ourselves after Jesus. And these five gifts are actually an expression of him as he has gifted them to us. And so as we think about this and grow in these, we become more like him and we express Jesus in the marketplace. And that's the goal.
With that, let's dive into today's episode. As you guys know, we've spent the last few weeks not only talking about every single gift in the Ephesians 4 passage, but we've also talked through what do you do with all of the gifts? We all have all five. Do we ignore the other three? And today we just wanted to talk over coffee about how do these gifts get warped? How do our wounded hearts make these gifts lesser than? How do they display themselves not like Jesus? And how can we open ourselves up for the long work of healing our hearts and our wounds?
That sounds like a good conversation. I think it's important, Amy, just to by way of intro, make sure people understand, we see this and we are experiencing this as a framework that really describes a lot of what happens in the relationships, in the leadership, in the structure, in the work of both business and ministry. So when we talk with people about the way they're going to go to market, there's elements of the going to market even that are apostolic, prophetic, evangelistic, shepherding, and teaching. So because this framework is an expression of the person of Jesus on the earth, the planet earth, it fits into all kinds of stuff. And so it's a bigger conversation, really, than just what is my gift or what gifts do I have? What are the areas where I'm strong and what are the areas where I need to grow? So I think it's a bigger conversation. So today, talking about our personal life wounds, the wounds to our heart, do those impact the way those gifts are expressed? I think that's a kind of important conversation.
Yeah. We get a little funny sometimes talking about the heart. I don't think women mind talking about the heart, but I'm not sure, Dave, you can tell me, I'm not sure how many men really want to sit down and meditate on what's happening in their heart really ever for any reason. Would you say that's true?
The world teaches us that we have to guard our heart, right? We don't want to show our heart. We don't want to show our cards. And so men tend to be much more reserved. And I know when I do start talking about them, I get emotional really fast when I'm talking about, or someone's talking about it in a teaching setting. And that's partly because I've just learned I got to be the tough guy and I got to do what I got to do. I got to just suck it up. And I think that's true for everybody to some degree. I think we hide our hearts away in different ways, but I think in our culture, men, we don't wear our hearts on our sleeves. If we get offended, if I get offended, someone ticks me off, it'll take me a day to actually feel angry. It doesn't happen right away.
Speaking as a woman in business, I think that we're taught pretty quickly that if we don't act more like a man, if we're too emotional, we're going to get called out at some point. We're going to either be called a really unlovely name that's also akin to the female dog, or we're going to be seen as untrustworthy or as something. So I would say in the business world, professionally, women also tend to push these things aside. So that's interesting.
Do you think that we have to equate our heart with our emotions? Are they the same thing?
Great question. That's a super great question. I think that our emotions are one of the ways that we understand what's happening in our heart. It's one of our heart's greatest ways to express itself.
Yeah. The Old Testament description of this really is the core of who you are. And it actually refers to the gut or the stomach. And there's probably some physiological connections to our own emotional, spiritual health in our stomach. I'll bet they're all connected.
Oh, definitely. It's the second brain, as we know.
Yeah. So I think that when we think about our heart, we're really talking about we're definitely talking about our soul. We're talking about the unique identity that we have. So I don't even know. It's hard to define it, but I do think we do know that it can get wounded. And it's pretty much a standard fare of all human existence is for your kind of self-identity, your self-awareness, the way that you perceive yourself and others, the way you hold yourself and others. I think that gets wounded at a very early age. And as soon as we start interacting with other people, it's like someone saying, let the beatings commence. And we go through this whole process, right?
Yeah. The reason that I think that this conversation matters, best illustration I have for this is the character competency chart. So we spent a lot of time talking about capacities or skill sets, abilities. And we have spent time talking about how those are expressed in our character. But if you've ever seen a character competency chart, or a character skill chart, you should Google it. You're going to see a matrix with four quadrants, right? So at the very top left, you're going to have low capacity, low skill level, but high character. Okay, someone who's just a great person, but they're not great at a lot of stuff. This is someone who's going to do limited good. At the bottom left, you're going to see someone who is no character and no skill set, and they're basically no good to anyone. On the bottom, you're going to see someone who is, let's see, I don't have one in front of me.
It's high
skill,
capacity,
low character. Okay.
Right.
So they have really great skills, but they have no character. This is someone who can do unlimited harm. And every time I bring that one up, I know everyone in the room immediately has a person in their head. Oh, I've met a couple people like that who were extremely talented at XYZ, but they destroyed everyone in their wake. And then at the top right of that quadrant, you're going to have people that are high character and high capacity, or high character, high skill, and these people can do unlimited good. The person that fits in that quadrant really best of all is Jesus, obviously. So if you think of yourself in any of those four boxes, or you think of parts of yourself in some of those quadrants, you start to get a sense of why this matters. Why does character matter? Why do we have to heal our wounds? Why do we have to submit ourselves to what the Holy Spirit needs to do in our identity and in ourself, so that we're constantly becoming more like Jesus in our character? So that if we're an incredible salesperson, or we are an amazing catalyzer of new things, or whatever the gift is, like, we don't just destroy people as we go.
It's a huge risk with highly talented people. I do think, though, the upper left box, which is a low capacity or low skill and high character, I do think a lot of people see themselves in that box. They see, I'm a good person, but I don't really have a lot to offer. And so I do think that this chapter of Ephesians 4 says something different about you than that. What I would say is that you may not be exercising or operating in the grace that God has given you, the gifts that Jesus has given you. So you do have potential to be high capacity, but you have to lean into that in order for that to happen, right? So you could be operating at a level lower. And I think for all of us, that's true. We're operating at a level lower than we could be. Now, those who are on the other side, on the lower right, those who have high capacity and skill but low character, these are the dozen. These are the people that are wrecking balls, right? And so they really need to grow up, right? They need healing, they need maturity, and they need people in their life who can help them to see the kind of the damage that they've been doing to people. Sometimes they've never had that feedback. Sometimes they're just so good that people don't care. And so who comes to mind is like a lot of celebrities that have these amazing talents, but they're just horrible people, and they destroy people in their wake. That's what comes to mind. But we also see this in businesses, where you have this person who's an amazing, whatever, sales, financial manager, negotiator, but man, they just kill people off, right? And so that is just also destructive. And so part of what's happening is, as we are interacting with people in our life, we are getting either pushed down or beat up based upon where we're functioning and where they're functioning.
Yes. There's no question that, in my opinion, sometimes the beginning of these healing moments is a recognition and a high level of compassion for the person that wounded you originally. Because the minute that you start looking at them as someone who also has giftings, and who maybe is immature in those giftings or wounded in their own giftings, you begin to view it differently, and you start to have more, I think, more compassion for, oh, you know what? They were just operating as a really dangerous evangelist when they did that. Mm-hmm. And that hurt me, and that wasn't okay. But I can at least understand maybe why that happened, and I can start to forgive them.
I do think we have to take it even a step further, and that is people that take their kind of their natural giftings and they turn them for evil. And they actually intentionally use these things to hurt people. And there are those people in the world for sure who are doing this on purpose, who become agents of evil. And so their skill, whatever they were created with, and what they could have been, has become something very bad. But you're right. No matter which one it is, someone who's just immature and talented, or someone who is talented and evil, they do wound a lot of people. And so the starting place is we just have to forgive them. And and you're right. When you have a sense of compassion, and like, you can think back in your life to people. I have things, people in my mind right now who have said some of the most outrageous things to me. That they weren't even directed at me, but the things they said were like, are you seriously saying that? You can think about these folks, and those things create an impact on you.
They do.
And you have to really come to a place where you can forgive them.
The other thing that is challenging about these high capacity people is that whether it's inside the ministry world, the church walls, or it's inside the business world, typically these are people who are so valued that all the leadership around them and all the people that are in a place to give them more influence and say, pat on the back, hey, great job, are just doing that a whole bunch. So those, I think those, that high capacity, low character reality just gets, what's the word I'm looking for? It gets encouraged and nurtured. So like inside the church, I'm thinking of the worship pastor who has an amazing voice and can play his guitar really well and leads amazing worship sets and is so extremely immature in his prophetic and shepherding that he goes so hard and so fast that he just destroys himself and his family. And all along, he's had leadership around him saying, you're so great at what you're doing. Keep going. You're awesome. But they're never stopping to say, hey, you forgot to put boundaries around your shepherding. Hey, like they don't have people building character because people almost misperceive capacity for character.
Yeah. Or capacity and skill is a measure of goodness or greatness. Mm-hmm. And so I do think there's an interesting contrast between the person who's high capacity, low character, and the person who's great character and not as strong capacity. And one of the things that's different between them is how they view themselves. The person who has this high capacity, who's got this reinforcement that you're talking about over and over again, I think they can tend toward thinking pretty highly of themselves, which leads to not looking around to see what kind of damage you might be causing. And the other person who's high character and low skill and they haven't developed it yet, they think poorly of themselves. So there's an interesting contrast. And Paul says it in Romans 12:3. He says, I give each of you this warning. Don't think of yourself as better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. So I think there's an interesting thing here. We have to be careful what we benchmark against. The reason that we're so interested and focused on these gifts in Ephesians 4 is because the whole world is benchmarking themselves against whatever personality test they've taken, whatever other person they're competing against in their job. We benchmark ourselves against other people. And what we should be doing actually is benchmarking ourselves against Jesus, the perfect human, right? The God-man who showed us and fixed humanity by becoming a perfect human. And so we should be focused on him. And so the measure is not how am I better than you? The measure is, am I like Jesus? And so that's why we are so committed to these five roles, because they exemplify the person of Jesus. But we have to look around in our life and say, is there anybody in my life who can bust my chops, either in a nice way or not? And thank God for spouses, because they have the gift of doing that. And it's always out of love. Sure. It's never, we say bad things sometimes we don't mean to say, but usually it's because they care about you. Any people in your life who are willing to tell you the truth and who are not so enamored with your amazing skills that they just ignore the bad stuff. So that's where maturity comes
really
from.
That's really true. That's very true. So let's talk a little bit. Now, Dave and I don't have some kind of magical piece of paper telling us, but we're just going to play with and imagine what wounds might manipulate each gift. What might that look like? And the intention of this exercise is not to pick at a wound. It is, however, intended to put up a mirror and say, hey, if you're hurting and this is what's happening, let's heal. Let's not be hurt. Let's not allow ourselves just to sit in pain, because we want all of us to be maturing and getting healing. So let's start with apostolic.
Yeah.
How might wounds manipulate an apostolic gifting?
I think a couple examples of that would be if you've been in environments where you were treated harshly or you were judged harshly, then you might, if you're apostolic, you might tend toward not really wanting to be accountable. If people have beat you up over something, you develop this risk aversion in your own heart. I'm not doing that again. Keep me away from that thing. And so I do think that's one area where people who are apostolic, they can resist accountability because they've been abused and they don't want to let that happen again. The other side is that apostolic people can be very focused on vision. And so the same thing happens when people are resisting your leadership or resisting your vision. You can, that pain, that wound can cause you to really become extremely dogmatic. Like you can become totally focused on the thing you're doing. You can become so single vision that it's not healthy. So I think that's something that happens when people have not responded. And I think anger can come out of that. Like, why won't people go along with what I know is the right way? And we're going to do this. I'm going to push you into it. And sometimes that's what they've had that done to them, where they've been bullied into something. So I do think that the truth is that we become like whatever we focus on. So somebody inflicts pain on us and we focus on that pain so much that we become like it, rather than becoming the opposite. Now, you can also go into a season where you just don't even want to talk about your vision because you're wounded. And you can become an apostolic person who is not living into their vision is pretty miserable. And so you can react to that as well. And I think also failure creates the same kind of reaction. I tried the thing, it exploded on me. I'm still ashamed of that. And so there can be a hesitance to step back into the things that you know you've been called to do or lead. And as a result of that, you can become pretty beat up and, you know?
Yes. What do you think happens to an apostolic person who is raised in a home with an extremely risk-adverse set of parents?
It's a good question. One of two things will happen. They will adopt the risk strategies, or they'll just become a little bit rebellious and they will find ways to do the thing anyway. And they'll become more set. And so I guess the question is, being risk averse is not necessarily a wounding thing. It can just be a personality type, right? It can be a lifestyle type.
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking.
It doesn't mean that you're,
I guess I'm thinking of maybe a fearful home, right? A home where fear rules. What does that do to someone's heart when they are built to set fears aside and take the risk anyway? I don't have an answer.
I think the best answer I could have is misery because they're wired. They're like an action figure who's been chained to a desk. This is the stereotypical police officer who wants to be on the street who's been forced to sit at the desk. Like, this person is miserable, right?
Yeah.
And they are an action figure and they need to be doing action things. And so I do think that, and that can be, it can be internal. So when I say think of a wound, I'm thinking of what's internal to me. I'm not thinking about what someone else is controlling over me, right? So the question I think we're talking about today is, what happens inside? What happens inside when I am told over and over again, that's too risky, that's too risky? I'm taught to fear. That's going to create a lot of conflict inside.
Yeah. Maybe a lack of self-realization or a lack of self-trust.
Yeah.
Like having natural impulses to do a thing, but having the constant voice in your head, that must be wrong or built wrong. Or
second-guessing yourself all the time and hesitating rather than moving forward. So those are all things that come. When you've been beat up, the natural response is for you to become more risk-averse yourself. You're going to be protective. You're not going to want to extend yourself. Or in this case, that person might become very individualistic and they're just going to do it themselves and they're going to just forget about everybody else and just go do it. And so that's another thing that happens is that if they haven't been able to get people to go along with them, or if that's been a very damaging thing for them, they could start just doing it themselves. And now they become the Marlboro Man. Yeah. Just go and do it yourself. Yeah. And I think that's
like
definitely
the vigilante of apostles.
Exactly. Exactly. And you can see that in the workplace. People that just don't want to work with anybody else, but they have strong drive to get things done. And in our culture right now, we have so much kind of isolation. The technology in our world has made it possible to be a solopreneur easier than any other time in history. Any other time in history, you'd have to have a village to sell your things that you made in the blacksmith shop to. Today, you don't, right? You can sell them online, never meet a single soul. The UPS man will just come pick up the box off your porch from your horseshoes that you made, you know?
Correct. Speaking of which, I saw my UPS man out in the wild the other day, and it was real weird. He was just eating dinner.
It's like seeing your teacher from school. It's like seeing your teacher from school when they're not at school, seeing the principal.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so how about prophetic gifting?
Can we just say, what does a person need to see in Jesus that helps them to get healed from this? Who's apostolic? What do they need to see? They need to see that Jesus was a risk taker, but he did that in submission to the Father. And so he submitted everything he did to the Father, but once he had clear direction, he went and did it. And he was always inviting others to come along, even knowing that some of them would betray him, right? He still brought them along. He also knew they were going to be flawed. And he was very generous in giving away his mission, right? He taught, he gave the 12 and the 72. So when we look at Jesus and focus on him, we see this submitted, humble, yet very assertive leader who brought others along, even though they were flawed, and was willing to take risks, not only on things that might be difficult in the public space, but also on people. And so I think that's what we're going to get from Jesus if we focus on him.
That's really good. I think that today I want to focus, just because this has been a great conversation, I think I want to focus on the A's, the P's, and the E's. And then we can do another episode about shepherds and teachers. They are pretty distinctly different groups of people anyway.
Yeah.
So let's talk about prophetic. In our prophetic episode, we talked a little bit about this Old Testament, New Testament dichotomy. A lot of prophetic people speak from an Old Testament style voice, one that's a little bit critical, one that's a little bit frustrated. And if you've ever encountered someone who's prophetic that's speaking from this like really gracious, building up, encouraging New Testament voice, you can hear how very different those voices are. So what do we think wounds prophetic people into thinking that they have to sound Old Testament, or maybe they just do it? I don't know. What do you think?
To me, it's a couple things. One is they have any encounters with any humans. If they're ever involved with any groups of people, whether it's the local public school, whether it's the local civic, the county or city politics, whether it's the church, whether it's a club they're in, a sports group, doesn't matter. They are going to see things that need to be better, different, improved, more, have more integrity. They're going to see them and they're going to talk about them. So the problem is that we live in a culture that does not want to be accountable, does not want to be improved or challenged. We want to be just right because we say so, because we invented our own reality. And so the problem that the prophet has is that unless they are really consistently in God's presence, they are going to start to carry a lot of pain. And that pain only makes the problem worse, because now they just are more critical and they sound more cranky. But what's really happening is, it's John Gottman is the guy who created this thing called the Love Lab. And his theory was that when in a relationship, love is like a bank. When you have a relationship, you need to keep putting more love into the bank, because at some point you're going to do something stupid and there needs to be a withdrawal. And if there's not enough love in the bank, when you make a mistake or do something dumb, then there's nothing to withdraw, and now we have a problem, right? So the same thing's true for prophetic people. They're putting stuff in the bank that can be pretty negative because people don't like what they're saying. And telling people that they need to turn toward God in a new way, if you want to talk about the spiritual part of this, is a pretty intense deal, right? It's not something our culture wants to hear about. So we make fun of it, right? We make fun of these people, right? We automatically think of the person wearing the sandwich board that says, end of the world is near. That's who we're thinking of. And so this person can build up a lot of that pain in their heart and a lot of unforgiveness. And it doesn't really matter who it comes from. It can come from a lot of places, but it just starts to build up and bubble over. And like in my mind, the only antidote for that is just spending a lot of time with the Lord and allowing him to keep your heart soft and to forgive a lot of people a lot of times. And I also think that what wounds them is that they take all this personally. Like, I told you that if you did that, this is what was going to happen. And now it happened and you didn't listen to me. And what these folks have to remember is it's not you that they're ignoring. It's God. It's the truth, right? They're suppressing the truth. They're not suppressing you. And so you shouldn't take it personally. But in the end, you got to trade these things out. Otherwise, you're going to carry this around like Ebenezer Scrooge, you know, on a bad day.
Don't you think that sometimes it becomes personal because people make it personal? They're not hearing, hey, God is calling you into something more beautiful. They hear, oh, you think I'm doing it wrong. You have a problem. You just can't ever be satisfied. There's just always an issue. So it becomes really personal. So I would imagine that can be very wounding. And I think you're dead on with the forgiveness piece. Like, one of the key ways this has to get healed is through forgiveness, because there's got to be such an overwhelming amount of it happening all the time. Having spoken to and having good friends, a lot of prophetic friends, I've spoken to a lot of prophetic entrepreneurs, church hurt is top of the list. It's just so painful. But I think the other thing that I hear that people don't always cue into is a lack of forgiveness or grace for self. Imagine you're highly prophetic and you're walking around seeing all these places where people aren't aligning up to God's heart and they're not fulfilling the covenant and there's more and better for them. And you know that if they just realign themselves with what it is God's asking, that it would be so much better for everybody. If you're doing that to other people or you see the world through that lens all the time, imagine the lens you see yourself through and how much you just cannot measure up, like, ever. So I imagine that there's also self-wounding happening.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. The tape starts to play in your head where you're saying the same things about you that other people, you think other people are saying. They're probably not, but you think they are. And you say it to yourself over and over. I think the mistake here is when you see something that could be better or should be different, I think if you're prophetic, I think you have to press through until you don't only see the wrong or the issue, but you see the hope. You see the opportunity. You see the promise. And so if you're really filled up with the promise that God has for people, then that's what will come out, right? Rather than just the critical. Because in the end, that's what this is about. We want to say to people, hey, if you make that choice, you're going to miss out on something really amazing. Here's what I think the amazing might be. And so we're always leaning into the promise of heaven rather than only the thing that's wrong. And that's a kind of a self-reinforcing cycle. The more you focus on the bad and the negative, the more people respond to you negatively, and the worse you feel about it and the angrier you become and the crankier you sound. So the more they reject you, it's reinforcing.
Yeah. There's such a nuanced difference between the voice of a New Testament sounding prophetic person. The best example I can think of is related to the way that you're prophetic during leading worship. I wish I had an entrepreneurial example. Maybe you can come up with one of those, Dave. But if you have a strong prophetic voice and you're speaking in this more critical Old Testament tone, the way you're going to sound from stage is going to be something like, come on, guys, worship. He's worthy of being worshiped. Sing louder.
Right. Get
versus,
with it.
It's like a cajoling. Versus.
Or worse, what's wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not the intention, right? That's not the reason they're saying it. But so the New Testament sounds like, God loves you so much. He is so worthy to be praised in every circumstance. It's like a voice that draws you in to the heart of God and says, ooh, I want that, versus being pushed into the heart of God by force.
I think it's the same thing happens when we work a marketplace setting in which let's just say we're working with a team of salespeople and we know that they could do better and we know that they're not reaching their potential. The thing I think we miss is that people have plenty of their own guilt and shame. They have just plenty of it. They carry it around. If they didn't meet their goal, they already feel terrible. So we're not actually accomplishing anything by leaning into the guilt and shame. We're just becoming a force of condemnation in their life. But so I think if you assume, and the truth is that if the Holy Spirit is in a person's life, then there will be conviction present. They may not be in touch with it. They may be ignoring it. We're trying to fill up McNoise to get rid of it, but it's there. And so as soon as they come in touch with the heart of God for their life, we in one of our groups, we're actually looking at some of the Bible experiences that Peter and Abraham and Jacob and Isaiah had. And as soon as they came into the presence of God, immediately that shame came up, right? Because it's already there. And so I think if you're a prophetic person, you don't have to beat people up to get them to realize they're doing bad. They already know. What they need is to know that the heart of God, this is the story of the prodigal son, that the father is still waiting with open arms for you. He's got a really big dinner he's cooked. He's taken off his favorite jacket. He's ready to give it to you. It's probably something from L.L. Bean. It's a really nice one. It's a hiking jacket. And so he's waiting for you. So I think that's the difference. But I think you have to apply it to yourself first. You have to realize that this is for me. Yes, I didn't do that. And so I just need to forgive myself. I need to let God forgive me for that and accept his forgiveness for myself. And then I need to forgive those people that didn't like my grumpy tone. Now, some people will still get angry if you introduce them and call them into the presence of God. Some people will still get angry. They will still beat you up. And I remember sitting in a car. I was in junior high school. I was in the car with this girl and her mother. It was in the front seat of their pickup truck. And I was just sharing very openheartedly about my experience with Jesus. And the mother, and it wasn't, there was nothing condemning about it. And the mother started laughing at me and mocking me.
Whoa.
Out loud. Yeah. So even, and I wasn't sharing, I wasn't trying to convict her. I was just like talking about what Jesus had done in my life, which was pretty cool. And so that will happen to you anyway, but you just have to forgive them. You have to give them to him and just, and often forgiveness needs to be, you need to say it out loud that you forgive that person and say to God, I forgive that woman for doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good. We are out of time today for the session. So we'll keep talking about this next week, diving into the evangelistic and shepherding and teaching wounds. Aren't you guys so excited?
Oh, boy. We'll just rename this podcast Pain RS. But like an encouragement, Amy, like an encouragement for people, if we've touched on something that's a wound for you, like here's the simple solution. Just take that and just spend some time and present that to Jesus and just say, Jesus, this hurt me and I want you to heal me and forgive me of this. And I want you to forgive that person. Just spend time with him. He will fix it because he is perfect and he understands the pain. And by the way, he has a little experience of his own in carrying wounds, right? He took those for you. They're on his body. Whatever that wound is that you are feeling right now, it is on him. Even now today, not just when he was crucified, but in the heavens, it is on his body right now. Mm. And that tear that you're feeling, it's in his eye.
That's beautiful. Also, just a reminder that relationships are how we're wounded, but also relationships are how we are healed. And I am a really big believer that God likes to use his people to do that. Certainly relationship with him is the anecdote, but relationship with other people who love him can actually be a major part of how he chooses to heal our hearts. So confess it to him, talk to him about it, and then ask him to let you be vulnerable with someone that you can trust.
That's really good. And also, on a very crass commercial note, hey, please subscribe to our podcast, if you would. We'd like you if you'd do that. It has nothing to do with any of this stuff we're talking about, but like in a practical matter, if you like this stuff we're talking about, please subscribe. If you don't like it, please email us and give us some suggestions. We won't be offended, I promise.
Awesome. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.